Just a couple of things to say following on from the first session this morning. I've had a number of people ask about the version of Psalm 27 that I read extracts from at the end. I'm going to give both a printed copy of this to Jen, and also I'll send it to her electronically. So if you would like a copy of that, either printed by her or sent to you by email, then use her as your conduit, and she will get it done. Second thing just to say is that in thinking about our personal relationship with Jesus as his disciples, it may be that one of the things that just came to your mind this morning, I don't know, as you thought about just your own walk with him, is, well, maybe things have got a little bit, you know, I used to do this and now I'm not quite as clear. I used to have some more personal time with him in the word and in prayer, and I've become a little bit lax on that. One of the things that might help you is this little booklet that's simply called 7 Minutes with God. And that might be of help to you. You might think, well, I don't have time in my schedule for, you know, to sit there for an hour and study the Bible. But actually, the idea of maybe spending 7 minutes with God in a way that sort of is a little bit planned and structured, sounds funny for 7 minutes, but yeah, to make the most of that time might be of help. So I've got just left some copies of this little booklet on the front table, and if you want to take one of those at the end of our time together, feel very, very free to do that. Well, 2 sermons in one morning. Got sufficient stamina for that? Reminds me the story of the pastor who was used to operating in a city centre context, and he one day went out to preach in a rural church, and when he got there he discovered that there was only one person at the service. He was sitting right there in the front row in front of him, and he'd prepared his sermon, so he just decided to go for it. And, you know, he gave the lot. It was the gospel and the kingdom and hellfire and, you know, sanctification, redemption, the lot all in one. And there was this one guy sitting in the front there, and so the end of the service came and he met him at the door, and he said, "Good morning, brother, lovely to see you here." He said, "How did you get on this morning?" He said, "Well, put it like this, Pastor." He said, "If I go down to the meadow with my truck full of food and I only find one cow there," he said, "I don't dump the whole lorry on it." So if you feel like the lorry's being dumped a bit this morning, 2 sermons in one morning, let's hope not anyway. And but thank you again for the opportunity to share. Now, in our first session, we focused our thoughts on what might be described as universals of discipleship. These are the things that all of us need to take on board, whoever we are, at whatever stage of spiritual journeying we are. We all need to take on board the fact that our relationship with Jesus needs to be a relationship of love and of learning and of lordship, right across the board. In whatever situation we find, in whatever culture and context we find ourselves, it wouldn't matter if I was speaking to a group of Filipinos or Ugandans or whoever this morning, those same 3 things are biblical essential requirements for us as disciples of Jesus. Disciples for all Christ's followers are the outworking of those things we've talked about. But those biblical universals, if I can put it like this, are not the whole story. And in this session, I want to explore this with you a little bit more. I'm hoping that at the end of this time, there might even be a few minutes for questions that you might have. If either as a result of what we shared earlier or in this session, you have a question, I'm hoping there may be a few minutes. I'll just say that right up front in case you have something that comes to mind. And what I want to do is I want to look at a passage of scripture that I'll put up on the board. By all means, follow it in the Bible if you want, but the verses will be up there. And as with Psalm 27 earlier, my intention is not to expound this passage, but rather to allow it to form a backdrop for everything that we're going to say. Because I think illustratively, it speaks to the issue that I want us to look at in this second section. And the passage is in 1 John chapter 2, and just a little passage verses 12 to 14. The Apostle John writes, "I write to you, dear children, because your sins have been forgiven on account of his name. I write to you, fathers, because you have known him who is from the beginning. I write to you, young men, because you have overcome the evil one. I write to you, dear children, because you have known the Father. I write to you, fathers, because you have known him who is from the beginning. I write to you, young men, because you are strong, and the word of God lives in you, and you have overcome the evil one." So just three short verses from that letter written by the Apostle John. As may be the case with at least a few of you here today, I will be forever indebted to the Navigators for the foundation that they helped to lay and helped me to lay in my personal discipleship. As I said to you earlier this morning, going back almost 50 years as a faltering teenage Christian lad, much more interested in girls and games, if the truth was known, than in God, even though I'd made that childlike confession of faith, God used the Navigators to help me to get to know Jesus as my Lord personally, get to understand more of what it meant to love him, to follow him, and ultimately to serve him, to establish priorities and practices, habits, disciplines, many of which are still with me to this day. But as I look back to that time, I think there's one thing that I wish I'd understood more clearly. And it's that some of the specific methodology and the helps that we were given at that stage of our Christian life didn't seem to take into account very much our differences, the differences between us in the group. Or perhaps didn't really help us to navigate some of the impending changes that were going to come in later life. For example, the practice of an extended devotional time with God first thing in the morning is very beneficial and highly desirable. But it's a different matter altogether whether you're a student at university with a not too demanding course, which I was on, or later in life, in the hurly-burly of family life, business life, and a daily schedule that was very different. In-depth chapter analysis Bible study, which we did in our Navigator group week by week, was a highlight of my week when I was a student. But it became a little bit more difficult to engage to and commit to in quite the same way as I got older. And there are other examples that I could give. And one of the things that the Bible clearly illustrates is in a variety of ways we are different people. Now, I'm stating the obvious, but it's very important that we understand it when it comes to being and growing as disciples of Jesus. We are male and female. Interestingly, that in the book of Acts, New Testament terminology acknowledges that. In Acts chapter 16, we're introduced to Timothy, who is described as a disciple. And there is a masculine Greek word for disciple in Acts 16. In Acts 9, we're introduced to Tabitha. And very interestingly, there is a feminine word for disciple that is used in that chapter. So the Bible clearly makes a distinction between male and female, but understands that in the pathway of discipleship, there may well be some differences that men and women need to think about. We're different, of course, in our marital status. Some of us by choice, and others of us not so. We're different temperamentally. I don't know whether any of you have done the Willow Creek Spiritual Pathways course. Anybody done that? No? Well, I come out of that, may not surprise you to learn, as a relational serving activist. Okay? I'm a relational serving activist. So if you come out as an intellectual, contemplative worshipper, which others might well do, your discipleship is going to look very different from mine. And that's not wrong. Not wrong, just different. And the Bible takes these differences and wants us to take these differences into account in terms of how we develop our discipleship and how we help one another to grow as disciples. We're different in our preferred ways of learning. Some of us love reading and study. Good on you. Go with it. Others of us observe, listen, and prefer things much more visual and life related. And the idea of sitting down with a book, let alone a study book, is abhorrent to us. Not wrong, just different. And we're very different ages, physically and spiritually. Ages and stages. We're at different points. We're at different points in life, and we're at different points in our Christian life. And so we have very varying needs. Collectively, the commentators seem really unsure as to what John meant when he wrote those verses in that we looked at earlier. Was he talking about physical fathers, young men and children in the church? Or was he talking about those who were at the different spiritual stages of growth? Spiritual fathers, spiritual young men, spiritual children. Actually, it doesn't matter that much in the context of what I want to say to you this morning. It may be if you want to get to grips with that passage and really understand it. If you do, by the way, I'd appreciate knowing, because I think it could go either way. But he was clearly working on the premise that within the family of God, people are at different stages in different ways. And that people therefore needed to be taught things and needed to be helped in different ways. He didn't say the same thing in that passage to the fathers and the young men and the children. He said different things. And whichever is true, and it may well be that to some extent he had both in mind, he was clearly working on the premise that Christian teaching needed to be applied to life as it was before us. And one of the reasons for this is simply that issues do change as life progresses. The issues of life that we face vary according to our age and stage of life, just as much as they do according to our culture and context and our personal circumstances. And we need to take these things into account in our growth in discipleship and even in our discipleship teaching. If you've never seen this quotation before, I want you to have a guess as to who might have said it. If you preach the gospel in all aspects, with the exception of the issues that deal specifically with your time, you are not preaching the gospel at all. Who do you think might have said that? Billy Graham? Okay, that's one very common answer. It's not right, but it might well have been Billy Graham. John Stott? John Stott's always up there, fairly high up. Wasn't John Stott? Any others? C.S. Lewis? It might well have been C.S. Lewis, but it wasn't. The answer will surprise you. Years ago, Martin Luther said, if you preach the gospel in all aspects, with the exception of the issues that deal specifically with your time, you are not preaching the gospel at all. And will you note that emphasis on the word issues? In other words, in our preaching of the gospel, even in our sharing of the gospel with those around us, we need to be able to bring truth to life. The gospel is not just a set of objective facts and realities that you kind of throw into whichever arena you happen to be in exactly the same way and hope that in some way God will bless it. Of course there is a spiritual dynamic. As Paul says in Romans 1, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. The gospel is the power of God for everyone who believes. And God can take and use his word in any and every situation that we share it in. But in our sharing of the gospel, we need to make sure that we are engaging with people's issues so that they understand how that the gospel that we want them to respond to can and will speak into the situations that they face. Rather than be some sort of separate compartment of their lives that we as professional Christians or professional ministers of the word want them to adhere to and add to everything else they're doing. Far from it. We're sharing with them the good news of Jesus that can impact every and any area of their lives, all of the time. So what I want to do for the remaining half hour of our time together this morning is to focus specifics among some specific issues, issues that relate to age, ages and stages, in part for our own benefit, but given that then much of what we'll say will not actually speak exactly to the age that you are, also for our benefit in seeking to influence and the opportunity to help disciple others, others who are not our peers, with those whose life issues we need to engage, whether it's in the church or outside. Now, one of the books that has influenced me and helped me greatly in this is a book by a man called Gordon MacDonald, whom some of you may know, an American pastor, author, who's written many excellent Christian books. Some of you may know a book that he wrote many years ago called, the title's gone out of my mind. Thank you. I knew it was on time management and ordering your private world. Yeah, his classic from probably 40 years ago. But this book that he's written much more recently is called A Resilient Life. And in it he speaks a lot to the issues of life that we face that can help us and or hinder us going on as Christ's disciples. What is it that will breed within us, that will build within us resilience to help us go on going on? And I make no apology for using some of his age-related comments. So if later you pick up this book and you think, hang on, that's exactly what Martin said, one or two of the things are, because I think he has some excellent thoughts related to age. And he prefaces all of those comments with this, oh, that's just a copy of the book, with this statement. I suspect that there are different questions for every age in life, perhaps every decade. Knowing them helps us to deal with people sensitively, and it gives us a better understanding of how to build a larger view of our lives. The questions form our approach to spiritual life. So if the way one does spiritual life was formed around 20-something questions, and one is now 50, spiritual life will likely be obsolete and ineffective. In each decade of life, as the questions change, the Bible reader discerns new insights from familiar Bible stories and teachings. Now, I don't know whether that resonates with you, but it certainly resonates with the reality of my life. As I've gone on in life, through the many decades, I've discovered that I needed God to speak primarily to me about certain life-related issues at different stages. And the Bible does that. And one of the great things about preaching and teaching the Word week by week, as you faithfully do at Emmanuel and in the many Bible preaching, teaching pulpits of our country, is that the same word that is preached can speak right across the age ranges. But we need to take that word and apply it to the specific situations we find ourselves in. So that's what we're going to do for the remainder of our time. So let's start with our... You're not supposed to be able to see those questions underneath, but they've come up on the screen anyway. Okay, let's start with the 20s. Okay? Now let me say right at the outset that these are artificial groupings, and they overlap. So don't say to me, well, actually, I'm in my 40s and I'm still wrestling with this issue. Absolutely. This is just, in broad brushstroke terms, some of the issues of life. So in our 20s, if some of us can remember back that far, but our 20s are a time of high energy and high activity. I led a discipleship group in my own church about 20 years ago, so I was in my 40s, 20 years ago, and all the guys, it was a young men's Bible study group, discipleship group, and they were all in their 20s. And we used to meet on whatever night of the week it was, and we met roughly from 8 o'clock till 10 o'clock. And by 10 o'clock, I was just about ready to finish and go home, and they were all going off to do other things. You know, some of them were going off to play squash, some were going off to meet friends, some were going off to, you know, some other activity. And there was I, you know, reeling from having been with them for these 2 hours. I just wanted to go home, sit in the chair, have a cup of cocoa and go to bed. It's a time of high energy, high activity, high learning. It's generally a very optimistic time of life in the 20s. Maybe less so now because of the employment situation that's not as good as in previous years. But it's also quite a self-oriented time. And therefore perhaps with some major anxieties or uncertainties. So, who am I? Is a major question in your 20s. What am I learning about myself? That's very important as we lay a foundation in our 20s for the rest of life. What do I want to do with my life? What do I want to accomplish in life? Can I get some steer on that early in my life in order to set some direction for the remainder of it? Where's my place in the world? What will bring me success in life? Will I be loved? Love becomes a big issue in our 20s. If it hasn't done, and it probably has for some beforehand in teenage. Will I be loved? Can I love? Am I lovable? Will love feature as a ingredient, as it were, of my life from here on? Or am I going to be some sad, lonely person who can't find love? These are really crucial issues for us when we're young, particularly in our 20s. As we move into our 30s, we become much more busy and work-oriented. There is a loss of personal freedom to some extent. We become immersed in our career. Perhaps we get married and begin family life. And suddenly we're juggling family and career. And the busyness of life begins to weigh heavily on us. Doing largely overrides being. We're just busy and active all the time. The tyranny of the urgent is a crucial issue for us. Because there's so much right in front of us to do all the time. So how do I prioritize? How do I ensure that I keep the main things as the main things when life throws all sorts of other things at me all the time? I've watched our son negotiate working life through his 30s. And some of you will have experienced this yourself. And it just blows my mind sometimes just to sort of see him be up early in the morning, you know, and then work all the way through until seemingly early the next morning. Just occasionally, once recently, I phoned him, or Marion phoned him, and he'd been there, he'd had to go into a hotel for a few hours from 2 o'clock in the morning, just to stay for a few hours so he could be back in the office by seven again the next morning. And now he's abroad, you know, he's over in Switzerland doing a big photo shoot for a company, and he was supposed to be home today, and he's not home today. They've had too much snow, would you believe? Too much snow in Switzerland this week. So he couldn't get the job done. But we've watched him. And huge pressures on him during that time. How do I prioritise my commitments? How is my spiritual life really doing in the midst of this? Do I even have time for a spiritual life? Do I have time for a relationship with God? What does it mean? It obviously doesn't mean what it meant when I was a student at university. It can't now. So what does it mean? How do I work that out? Who are those I'm close to and I can trust? This is a really crucial issue for those in their 30s. Are there people who are coming close to me and to whom I'm coming close, who I really can trust in life and who can begin to walk with me through the experiences of life? I think it's an especially vital question. And it can be a time, especially for men, I think much more than women, time for men when friendships diminish, particularly spiritual ones, especially if and as the career and the family begin to take over big time. Our personal friendships as men can become very marginal. But you see, the older we get, and it needs to start ideally way back in our 20s and 30s, the older we get, the more important it is that we have people to whom we're close, who we can trust, and that we're travelling through life with. If we're to go on growing as disciples of Jesus. If you're taking notes, you might want to write down two scriptures from the book of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 13. We won't have time to look at these now. Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 13. Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 and 25. And given that the theme of the book of Hebrews, or a major theme of the book of Hebrews, is persevering in our walk of faith, those two scriptures speak to the importance of having people around us who can speak into our lives and help us. And one of the implications of that truth is that if we don't have people in our life who can do that, then our ability to sustain discipleship further on in life will be diminished. I am immensely grateful for a men's triplet that I am part of. I have two brothers in Christ. We meet roughly every 4 to 6 weeks. And essentially all we do is we share our lives together. We usually open the scriptures, but it's not in a way of deep Bible study. We refer to things that God's speaking to us about and we look at some passages together. But essentially we come together to share our lives. We're all people that have been through, we're all in the same age and stage of life, we're all in our 60s. We've all experienced the various ups and downs in life. But essentially our goal is simply this, to speak into one another's lives, to hold ourselves accountable in certain areas, but essentially to encourage one another to keep on keeping on. That's an immensely valuable dynamic in my personal discipleship. As much as coming to church or going to the prayer meeting or whatever it happens to be, for me that's absolutely crucial, and I believe it is for many of us. And do we have relationships like that? I think the women do find it easier than men, but even so, whether we're man or woman here this morning, do we have the relationships like that? Even one. Do we have one relationship of somebody with whom we can share deeply? There's a spirit of mutual trust, so that what we say with one another doesn't go any further than that relationship, and it's not going to deteriorate, or the friendship will not deteriorate or diminish because of it. So that our lives can be sharpened as we meet together and share. It's going to be difficult, if not impossible, for us to make progress as Christ's disciples without that. Okay, let's move on. Our 40s. I think there are probably one or two here in the 40s this morning. I'm not pointing at anybody. The beginning of midlife, with all its potential crises of one sort or another. Perhaps in our 40s, for the first time, we truly begin to think of ourselves as grown up. You know, we've come through that sort of foundation time. And now we're in our 40s. But paradoxically, some of the issues we now begin to face leave us even more perplexed and uncertain than previously. If I'm truly adult and mature now, why do I have so many uncertainties? Am I really happy with life's direction? I mean, I've been in this career now, or whatever old job that I'm in. You know, I've been in it for 15, maybe 20 years. Is this really what I want to do? Am I happy with my life's direction? Do I want to do something different? Should I perhaps consider now, at this midlife point, doing something completely different with life? Listen to Gordon MacDonald on this particular subject. Interesting the way he expresses it. He says, I believe the 40s to be dangerous, uncharted waters for a lot of us. Lots of things begin to happen for which many of us are not prepared. Bodies change. Children become more independent, even begin to leave home. Marriages have to be readjusted to face new realities. Some of us begin to enjoy financial freedom. Others of us begin to assume that we will never be materially secure. Some give up the fight to achieve lifelong goals and settle into a posture, a defensive posture. Others begin plotting a second life, a second career. If one listens carefully, he might hear the word trapped used in the questions that now arise. Our 40s may need to be for us, as Christian disciples, a time of major reevaluation. Maybe this is the point at life. Of life, where God would say, okay, this is where I have brought you to this point in time. But I've got something new for you to do. New career, new service, new undertaking of some sort. And perhaps it would be helpful for us in our 40s to think of taking some kind of a time out, just a sort of personal reflection time, to be able to evaluate some of these things. To ensure there's clarity about the way ahead, especially spiritually. But one thing is for sure, whatever the future looks like, it won't look like it did when I was in my 20s. It will look different. And I need to seek God about that difference if I'm to continue to walk with Him. We need to move on. 50s and 60s. Those of us in our 50s would probably prefer not to think about it, but the fact is, we have crossed life's midpoint. We're now in the second half. And yes, we begin to think seriously about how many years we've got left. Was never a question before, but now we get to this stage of life and we think, wonder how long I am going to have. The sort of questions we ask is, why is time moving so fast? Why is my body beginning to let me down? How speedily will the process go? If we're married, how can I and my spouse refocus, reinvigorate our relationship? After all, we've been married now for 20, 30 years. Some of it's becoming a little samey. How can we refocus and reinvigorate that, now that the children have left home, perhaps? And how do I navigate all of the various transitions of life and anxieties that I begin to experience in a new way at this stage of life? See, the transitions come wave upon wave upon wave, particularly in our 50s and through into our 60s. When I was 50, when I passed 50 years old, enjoyed my 50th birthday, Bev was still living at home. Our son Nick was off at university. I had just taken on the directorship of the UK Navigator work in terms of overall leadership. I was still playing golf regularly. And that characterized how life was. When I reached 60, 10 years later, we had an empty nest that we'd had to get used to. We had one married child. We had one divorced child. And we had, by that time, three grandchildren. I couldn't play golf anymore because my back wouldn't let me. and I'd had to start to wear these things, which I hadn't done at 50. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to see you or my notes this morning. All within a 10-year span. And we had to navigate all of those things. Empty nests, divorces, parenting, grandparenting, huge job responsibility, body failing, as disciples of Christ. It was part of our discipleship journey as we journeyed through life. And yes, some anxieties began to come with them. Now, I'm not an anxious person. If we were to both stand here this morning, Marion and I, and share a little of our life before you, Marion would say she, by nature, is much more anxious than I am. I'm almost the opposite extreme. I'm not an anxious person. But I tell you, once I got into my 50s, and particularly in my late 50s, I began to experience a few anxieties for the first time. You know, for myself, for my children, for my grandchildren. Little questions in the mind that I've never had to face before. And then we move into our 60s. And in our 60s we can find ourselves facing an increasingly complex range of simultaneous demands and responsibilities. Caring for elderly parents. Adult children issues. Ooh. Didn't still expect to be doing that in our 60s. Thought they'd be gone. Really? Issues of lifestyle and spirituality in our children as adults. And all the time against the backdrop of our own failing physical and mental capacity. I remember one of the guys in one of our early second half living groups, he said, you know, I thought when I passed 60, he said, I thought basically life would be about the easiest it had been and that I would certainly have more answers than I had questions. He said, I found it exactly the opposite. I have questions that I didn't know I had before that have come at this stage of life that I'm having to take to God and take to other people. And we might start asking questions like, will I have time and health to fulfill my dreams? Yes, will my spouse or I die first? Very live question for those of us in our 60s. And what are the implications of that? Are there things I need to do to prepare for whichever eventuality God allows? So in our second half living groups, as well as opening the Bible and discussing them, we've talked to folk about things like making a will, downsizing house, planning a funeral, decluttering the house. Because see, if all that clutter is still there, and one of you goes tomorrow, the other one's going to be left with it. Or the kids are. So last week, very enthusiastically, Bart came and helped me clear the loft. But this is reality. And perhaps more than anything else, what have I done that will outlive me? And will I finish well? That's the ultimate question. Will I finish well? When I run through that tape at the end of the race and God says, you're coming home now, will I be able to say, well, whatever else is true, Lord, you help me finish well? Again, that's what the book of Hebrews is all about. And then very quickly, 70s and beyond. Somebody said to me recently, a 70-year-old in our church, I said, how are you today? He said, you know, I'm tired, very tired. But he said, inside there's a 30-year-old bursting to get out. Some of us know exactly what that's all about. Does anyone realize or even care who I once was? Those of you that are younger than this, Have we ever talked to those who are 70 and beyond about what previous life was? You know, you may have in your congregation someone who used to sing in the Royal Opera House, or who built some building in London that you don't know about. They gave their life to this. It was part of their work. They used to work in a different church. They used to work with young people for 30 years. Does anybody care about any of that? Which controls in my life will I have to surrender to others? That talk about anxiety and fear. That's right up there. Do I still have a contribution? Okay, I'm in my 70s. The world focuses largely on those who are younger than me, and so does the church very often. But have I still got a contribution to make, or have I now been pushed to the sidelines? What does God say about that? Oh, and will I really be missed when he calls me home? Strange, isn't it? But actually, in our 70s, these are the kind of questions that are there. What is heaven like? In the book, Gordon MacDonald talks about a group of 70-year-olds that he meets with regularly for Bible study. And he said to a group of younger people once, he said, "Do you know, whenever we meet, every single time we meet, there is one subject that always comes up on the agenda." He said, "Do you know what it is?" They tried all sorts of things and didn't hit the nail on the head. He said, "I'll tell you what it is, it's death." In some shape or form, every time we meet, we're talking about a friend who is facing death, someone who's passed away. We're talking about our own preparations for death, or whatever it happens to be. And we need to understand that as part of our walk of discipleship, at that stage of life, these are the issues that we need to address. Okay, why have I spent most of the time dwelling on these things? For the simple reason that they will both test us and shape our discipleship. In fact, they're already doing so for all of us, whether we know it or not. These are the issues for which we do and we will need to trust God and find answers. And that's one of the reasons why, friends, we dare not navigate life on our own. We will need people around us, close to us, who we can trust, as we need to share about some of these issues, who will really seek to enter into them with us and understand us. And as we do that, we can then begin to think more freely about this ongoing contribution in life. Because see, ultimately, this is the question: what sort of legacy will you leave? And we can still think about legacy in life right up to that older age bracket we've just shared about. Not that sort of a legacy, actually. Spiritual legacy. What will be written on my tombstone? What would I like written on my tombstone? If God allows me long life, even into debilitating old age, will this verse still characterize me? The righteous will flourish like a palm tree. They will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green. Am I laying the right foundations for that? Now, whether I'm in my 30s or my 40s or my 50s, or whether I'm actually at that stage of life, what does God want me to do to prepare for or to live like that now? Our time's gone. I think the children are going to come, and I'm not sure that we do have time quite for questions, do we, Bart? Probably.
I can't see what the time is.
It's 12:35.
Maybe one or two. Yeah.
Okay. Long as the minister says we can, I'm all right. See, I can't go ahead of the schedule, but Jim.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of times about spouses.
Yes.
Things like that. But I mean, within this room, after yeah. this, but at least after some
yep.
people who don't have spells.
Sure.
And obviously the situation as they're growing older mm. is going to be a bit different.
Very much so. Well, I think that's where we come back for me to this issue of building relationships and relationships of trust with folk who can be close enough to us. Because that's the one thing that I hope we all have, but we should have if we have a spouse. Someone who's right there and can enter into our lives with us, who knows our deepest issues and needs. So we need to find people like that, build relationships like that. If we are single, for whatever reason, one of the guys in our triplet is a widower. He lost his wife about 20 years ago, and has navigated that pathway of life since then. He's very positive about being in the relationship with us. Just this week, I've been up here in London with an ex-navigator colleague who had his 80th birthday on Thursday. Has the beginnings of Alzheimer's, single man, been single all his life, has nobody really around him, even though he's been a churchgoer all his life. So some of us are trying to begin to think how we can enter into that experience with him. So that would be my immediate answer, I think. One more? Yes. Repeat the question. Yeah. What do you feel if you missed one of those stages and didn't ask and answer some of the questions when you should have done? I think I would probably suggest that you filter those questions as to which are the ones that you really think are important to still answer or not, as the case may be. And it may be that you need someone to sort of, again, who's a sounding board for that with you. Because there may be some essential gaps, just like there can be essential gaps in our spiritual education and process. Sometimes we need to go back and plug them. But it may be that actually they're not as crucial to face where you now are, because other things have superseded them. So if somehow you can grade those and know the ones that ideally you do need to go back to, I think that would be helpful.
I think we've better
yep.
call that Pat. Last one.
The one thing when you are in the latter stage,
yes.
The importance of relationships with some children becomes important.
Absolutely.
Then before, you know,
sure.
generation gap.
Exactly.
The thing is that if your child is not
Christian, yeah. Yeah. Sure. And that's where we need to take into account that we've got such different circumstances. Many of us here don't have children, don't have grandchildren. But those of us that do probably have them in the both categories, some who are walking with the Lord and others who are not. But the ones who are not walking with the Lord can still be a terrific help to us in navigating some of the practical issues of life in later life. And in fact, they can be a mission field for us. In terms of influencing them to live as a 75-year-old, an 80-year-old disciple of Jesus. Who knows, it may even be a means of them coming to faith themselves later on in life. But I better stop.
Great. Thank you very much, Martin. But all you've said there, fascinating, going through the different ages. I think, as you've been speaking, one of the things that's come back over and over again is the need for us to walk together through the different stages of life, and therefore... just to have that sort of thinking, who are those